Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
It's a supersized edition of the Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The playoffs are upon us. We are headed to the 2021 postseason. The Milwaukee Bucks are the 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, and they will face the Miami Heat, a familiar, unfriendly foe from last year. Of course, the team that defeated the Bucks in the Eastern Conference semifinals went on to the NBA Finals before falling short to the Lakers. That is a team with many of the same characters. Lots to talk about. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I'm a writer from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. On the other line, it's my colleague Jim Ozarski. He's the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Jim, we've got playoff basketball. We're going to have fuller arenas than we have had during the regular season. How are you looking forward to that? That's got to be at least something to look forward to as we gear up for game one a little over a week from now.
Yeah, you know, I am looking forward to going back to Miami. Last time I was there, I didn't leave a hotel room for 3 days, and it was creepy and weird in December and still the middle of the pandemic. Chance to go to Brooklyn maybe, and then Philadelphia again, and wherever out west. If you're the Bucks or Bucks fans, you hope I'm making all those trips for the Journal Sentinel here. we'll see. Bucks Twitter is interesting, JR, with the boogeyman that is the Miami Heat. I'm not sure I share sort of all of those fears, but I understand it. And yeah, so it should be a ride. If they're going to get to the finals, JR, for the first time in 50 season or since 1974, they're going to earn it.
Yeah, we are definitely going to talk about that. I've been to Florida, but never in December, never between the holidays. Is the beach still happening? Is that still something you can do December, assuming there is no pandemic?
Yeah, it was. Well, they were still doing it down there anyway, JR. I just was not about to join them.
Yes.
So yes, they were out, and the weather is nice. There's a reason. It's a populous place. So I am looking forward to actually seeing Miami a little bit besides just the rental car ride. I've been to Florida in other areas, just not down there. So yeah. And let alone like excited playoff basketball. Like I know Miami gets kind of a knock, I think at least in the NFL circles, like, are they really Dolphins fans? Like, are they really, I think they're Heat fans, JR. I mean, I think like going back to the Dwayne Wade, to be quite honest, coming in and that whole and like the Pat Riley thing, like I think it is a basketball city. I guess I'll find out for sure though in a week or so.
Before Jim takes his talents to South Beach, there will be 2 games at Pfizer Forum. Unclear on the schedule as we record this, but I believe things get going May 23rd. I said a little over a week, but Sunday, do you think that's likely the first day that the Bucks will be playing in the playoffs here?
This is fascinating. So to me, I think Bucks Heat is a sexy television matchup. But, I mean, you've got either Steph or LeBron, and you know that's how the networks view it.
Well, you have Steph and LeBron against each other in the play-in game on Wednesday, first of all, which right. I'm watching.
So you've got the winner of that playing Phoenix or what? So you've got Boston and New York. To me, the Knicks and Tom Thibodeau, like, I don't know if anyone wants, like, actually watch the Knicks play basketball.
Especially against the Hawks. Like, that's... So, if it had been Knicks-Bucks, I think there actually would have been quite a bit of national buzz around that. Knicks, certainly there should be over Heat-Bucks. But Knicks-Hawks is not going to move the needle.
To me, but you never know how the networks view the New York market, right?
Right. So, oh, yeah. It'll move it in New York. They haven't been in the playoffs in a decade. They're ready.
Yeah, so my bet would be, Bucks Heat should have a prime slot on a Sunday afternoon. But then again, I could also see them being stuck on like a Saturday matinee, sort of the thing to lead everything off. I could see it going both ways.
So back to this Heat regular season game on Saturday, the Bucks win that game. They play very well. They actually at points looked like they were dominating. The Heat made things interesting in the second half, as they should. They're a good team. Did not have Jimmy Butler, so the Bucks have not seen Jimmy Butler at any point this season. He sat out all 3 games for various reasons. The Bucks did win that game, and then find out on Sunday that the Nets had won, as expected. That clinched the 2 seed for Brooklyn. That made this final game against the Bulls completely meaningless. The Bucks sit all of their starters. Suddenly, everybody comes down with various aches and pains, of course, and Bucks gave it a run. Jordan Wara, we should actually talk about him at some point. I don't know if this is the podcast, but I mean, that dude had a great rookie year when he was given opportunities. I don't know necessarily what that means for his future, per se, but dude was pretty good. 34 points against the Bulls. That was, however, a loss. But again, that game became a moot point. So Milwaukee, you know, they by beating the Heat, essentially put themselves in a position where they are going to be facing the Heat. If Miami wins that game, if the Bucks do the exact same thing they do in the Bulls game and play their backups and Miami wins that game, they have the upper hand. And then all they have to do is beat Detroit, which they went on and did anyway. If they go on and beat Detroit, they would have the higher seed no matter what the Knicks do. And the Bucks would thus have to face the Knicks as the number 6 seed. The wisdom of not playing it the way they did, straight up, I understand it. You know, players are not interested in tanking any game ever. The coach doesn't want to do it. They don't want to manipulate the circumstances. Their whole thought is they got to go through everybody anyway. I still think there is a dramatic difference. I know that the Knicks and Hawks are seeded higher than the Heat. The Heat were a team that got off to a really slow start, coming off of a short turnaround because they went to the NBA Finals last year. They were a little dinged up at the beginning of the year. Their record is what it is because they started very poorly. They have been awesome lately. I believe it's 18-8 to close the season. I don't know why the Bucks would want anything to do with that team. Now, the Milwaukee still had a chance at the 2 seed, so I'm sure that's what they're thinking as they play Miami, but it was a pretty slim chance at the 2 seed. Teams resting players. All the Nets have to do is beat 2 lousy teams, which they did handily. I don't know if I would personally recommend that they should have gone out and not played all their starters against the Heat, but I do think that's going to have some consequences. I think the Heat are a much tougher first-round opponent, and I think the Bucks are going to feel that whether or not they get through that series and get to the Nets. I feel like there's going to be a price to pay for it, and I get the reason why they didn't. I just feel like maybe they should have. I feel like they should have thought about it.
I'll say they should have thought about it maybe when they got blown out of the gym in San Antonio, or maybe way back at the end of April, where they somehow lose at Houston, 143 points given up to a Rockets team that, right now I don't even remember who played for the Rockets. I don't think it was that Heat game, JR.
Sure, but this was the one that they had the most control. They knew the circumstances this time. The Clippers had no problem with it. They lost to 2 of the worst teams in the league to get what they wanted.
Well, yeah. I guess I'll disagree. I'll agree with you that they'll quote unquote pay for playing the Heat, in that it may be a 6-game series. You know, because I just don't think the Bucks are going to lose in the first round. I guess to me, the Knicks, this is going to sound weird. The Bucks chose to not really play the Knicks this year in the regular season, right? I think a couple of one of the games was like the bench game.
Yeah, and it's really just the one game. The one game that they just didn't.
The Knicks.
Yes, they played everybody.
Look, the Knicks, blasted the Bucks very early in the year. It was their first blowout loss of the season before we knew either of these teams. The Knicks, I think, play a brand of basketball that just doesn't suit the Bucks. Namely, they slow it down. They're physical. They play defense. The Bucks have really struggled, JR, this year with teams that play a slower pace.
And the Knicks are the slowest pace in the league.
And that's just, look, I'm not saying the Bucks were going to lose in the first round. I don't think that's going to happen. It's just a matter of how difficult is it. And I'm not about to sit here and say the Knicks wouldn't give them all they can handle either. So playing Miami, I think it's more of a, boogeyman syndrome. Like, oh, what happened in the bubble? Like, the bubble, I think, history is going to show, is such a weird thing on a lot of levels. I don't think the Heat are that team. The Bucks are not the same team. Jimmy Butler is fantastic. He has played so well. He's a big part of why you mentioned their success down the stretch. I just don't think Tyler Hero's the same guy. I don't think the Heat are the same team. And, yeah, I just think the Bucks, you know, they'll feel it. They'll have to work. You know, it's not going to – they're not going to run through, you know. But I think, you know, they'll win the series for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned that Rockets loss. I think that's April 29th. That's a Thursday night. I'm going to remember that night as one of the worst nights in Wisconsin sports history, and I think I'm going to remember it for a long time. That's the night we find out Aaron Rodgers doesn't want back in with the Packers. Corbin Burns is put on health and safety protocol, the Brewers' breakout star pitcher. Giannis leaves that Rockets game in an injury in the first minute, and then the Bucks go on and lose to the team with the worst record in the NBA. I mean, it doesn't really get worse than that. I think about that loss a lot when I think about where the Bucks stand, how they essentially finished one game out of the two seed. I mean, statistically they don't because they didn't send anybody in to face the Bulls, but I think they probably win that game. And then they really just not having that Rockets win ends up costing them dearly. And yes, you can't point to one game. There's a million games on the docket one way or the other that could alter the outcome when it gets this close down the stretch. But interesting that you think the Knicks would give them as much problems as the Heat. The Heat last year, obviously it was essentially a mismatch. I mean, the Heat really had their way with the Bucks. They were able to put up that wall against Giannis Antetokounmpo and really mitigate what he was able to do before he left the series with an injury. I do think there's one thing that makes this Bucks team much more likely to beat the Heat this time around. I think it's Jrue Holiday, because you know, part of making a wall is not being worried about what's going on at the perimeter. When Eric Bledsoe is out there, they didn't have to worry about the perimeter the way they do Jrue Holiday. It's a totally different dynamic. But I still think this Heat team is comparable. Statistically, they're definitely comparable to what they did last year. They still don't allow a ton of offense in the paint. In fact, they're the best in the NBA at that, at limiting what goes on in the paint. Their shooting efficiency was down. I wonder how much of that is just the slow start to the year and the slow first half of the season for Miami. But Duncan Robinson isn't the history-making three-point shooter that he was last year, so that's something too. But still, you mentioned Butler. Hero is still a thing to worry about. Bam Adebayo is a huge thing to worry about. I still look at this Heat team. I see the same team, maybe a slight tick lower, and the Bucks are a slight tick better. I don't know if that's enough to swing a series that was, you know, almost over in four games, but you must feel differently.
Yeah, the Heat are good, you know, or better, I should say, than they were earlier in the year. I mean, they're the sixth seed, you know, for a reason. They had to get that hot to stay out of the play-in. So let's remember that too. And all those things you said are right. And you know, the Bucks. It's weird. The year was weird. The first two games against the Heat were so early in the season. You know, one of them was the record-setting night where, you know, Sam Merrill's jersey should go to the Hall of Fame for setting the NBA record for three-pointers made in a game. And then they turn around and lose the second one. I don't disagree that they're good. I just think the Bucks are that much better, JR. I think they're just better equipped. Now, look, there's only a handful of coaches who have won a single NBA title in the last 30 years. There's even fewer who have several. Eric Spoelstra is one of those guys. You know, he's going to do some stuff that's going to frustrate the Bucks. You know, but I think the whole reason the Bucks have done the things they've done, from personnel wise to schematic adjustments, are for this. And I just think they're better. You know, I think they're better equipped to deal with it. Yeah, there's gonna be a day. I'll call my shot. There's gonna be a game where the Heat hit 24 threes, and they win the game, and and Bucks fans are gonna lose their minds. I almost swore there. You know,
we have editing software here. I could do it.
That's going to happen. Like, I think that because that's just the way the season has gone. That's the way the Bucks have played. The Heat are good. Duncan Robinson is going to hit five threes in a game. Tyler Hero's not going to go 1-for-11. But that's why it's a series. And I think they're just a better team over the course of seven.
Miami has won 8 of their last 10. One of those losses came to the Bucks, but again, Jimmy Butler didn't play, so it's a little hard to get a read on precisely what you're going up against. Butler and Adebayo, not three-point threats. Butler, kind of notoriously not a good three-point shooter. That's not where he makes his living. Last time, last year in the playoffs, it was the sort of peripheral guys. Jay Crowder, who's no longer here. I don't know about Avery Bradley. That's just a name that pops into my head. He's no longer here either. He was part of that Victor Oladipo trade that ultimately doesn't work out for Miami because Oladipo got hurt and is not going to be a factor in this series. But Goran Dragic is the big one. He's the guy who I believe was the second leading scorer for the Heat in that series. That's a guy from three-point range who really burned the Bucks. And Jay Crowder especially. I mean, that was his best playoff series in his career. And he's not going to be here. It's those guys on the periphery that the Bucks have had trouble with sometimes. They're able to sort of lock in key. And Duncan Robinson only scored 9 points a game in this series last year. He was not a problem. So knowing that their three-point shooting overall has declined because of Robinson isn't necessarily a feather in Milwaukee's cap to say, well, they're just not as good a shooting team as they were last year, because that wasn't the thing that burned them. Their big shooter wasn't the one who burned them. So I still think the Bucks do win this series. And if you're right, Jim, if the Bucks beat the Knicks in the alternate universe, but the Knicks still give them a fight, then it's a horse apiece, because I do think that's ultimately the outcome here, that the Heat simply give them a test, push them pretty hard. And then they're a little bit worse for wear coming into that series with the Nets. If maybe that would have happened with the Knicks anyway, and then maybe none of this stuff ultimately matters. I'm really curious how this people are going to panic, Jim. If they lose one of those two games at Pfizer Forum out of the gate, the panic is going to be real, man. It's going to be all over the place.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that is the, you know, that's the part of playoff basketball. I think the panic would come obviously more from the fan base. I think for the Bucks, they're probably, I think fans should give the players a little bit of credit on that one, where, look, they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals. They've been to the second round. Bryn Forbes has played in a conference finals. Drew Holiday hasn't, but I think he's sort of proven to be that sort of unflappable figure. And I think that's going to matter a lot. So let's say, yeah, they somehow lose game one after 5 days, 6 days off. Look, that's what Packers fans, that's what football fans talk about, right? Like the bye week. Ooh, it's a bye week in basketball. No one knows how that's going to affect a team, good or bad, right? So, yeah, if they split, Miami will say that's great. I think the Bucks, you know, it's just a matter of, you don't want to lose two. I think the Heat are going to win two games in this series. It's just a matter of when it happens. And, you know, I get you. I just don't think the players are going to feel that. And I think that's part of, JR, part of that is because they lost five in a row during the year. They lost three in a row during the year several times. Like,
they never lost their cool with it. They were really chill.
Yeah, and I think that's part of that what fans are going to have to remember here when they got so upset about certain losses, how Giannis Antetokounmpo set that tone throughout the year. He made it a point to stay even keel, to win eight in a row, not care, lose five in a row, not care. Like, it's so, if they've never ridden that roller coaster, and they said that was a thing for them in the playoffs against Toronto and Miami, losing a game they didn't think they should or would, losing two, and suddenly having sort of that need to win a game. They weren't ready for that, and they feel they are. I guess we'll find out. But I guess, at least for me, in this series, JR, I mean, Brooklyn, you know, well, that's a different conversation when they get there. But this series, if Miami steals one at Fiserv, if they win two in a row in Miami to even the thing, like, I just don't think it's the same deal as a year ago.
Yeah, and Eric Nay made this point on last week's edition of the Point Forward podcast. If they beat Miami, well, the boogeyman concept, whether that's for the Bucks themselves or for the fans around the team, you know, now you got to feel like you can beat anybody. You just crushed, let's say they win in four or five. You just handled the team that got you last year. Now, I mean, now why should they be afraid of the Nets? Clearly, they're better than they were last year. So it could be a springboard forward. And I don't know if the Bucks need the shot of confidence, because what you're describing, you know, at least outwardly, they're not showing any signs of concern or worry when things are going south. You know, we talked about that Rockets loss. Well, then they went and won eight of their last 10. And one of those two losses is this Bulls game where they definitely weren't necessarily going all in. So the Bucks did right the ship. They are primed and ready for this. And we will certainly see. I'm anxious to get that schedule out so we could see when they start playing. Let's take the broader view. I've got some. I honestly seldom think of the NBA as appointment viewing when the Bucks are not involved. But this Lakers Warriors game on Wednesday is going to be fascinating. Again, the winner of the 7-8 seed games is automatically the 7 seed. They face off with the 2. The loser of that game then falls back to face the winner of the 9-10 game. So the winner of the 9-10 game will have to win twice. They have to win the 9-10 game and then come back and beat the loser of the 7-8 game to get that 8th and final playoff spot. One would assume both the Lakers and Warriors will find their way into the Western Conference bracket, meaning the Jazz and the Suns are going to have to work with MVP candidates on the other side there. Those are going to be fascinating series as well. But just in general, the playoffs as they break down, do you have any thoughts on any of the other matchups? Anything that that jumps out to you? And then we'll talk about some of the award winners we think from the NBA regular season.
Yeah, well, we'll start in the East. You know, I think that the Knicks Atlanta series, I think if you're a basketball junkie, is going to be kind of fun, just because of the way both of those teams ended the seasons. Look, they're both 10 games over 500. You know, that's a pretty good 82 game record if you extrapolate that out. And I don't know, JR, if anyone thought the Knicks would be that good. I think after Lloyd Pierce was fired in Atlanta, we mentioned Nate McMillan last week on the podcast. Like, I think that's like the basketball junkie in me is kind of interested in that. You know, playing stuff is fun. I'm a fan of it. I think it's a good idea. I doubt we'll see, you know, in the East, any of those teams beating Philly or Brooklyn. Out West, that's the thing, right? Everyone wants to know, like, okay, can the Warriors or the Lakers topple Phoenix or Utah? Are the top two seeds, who are the best teams in basketball, going to fall victim after a bye week to arguably the top individual stars, right? I don't know. I that's kind of what I'm interested in. I mean, I think Denver, Jokic and Dame Lillard, and I think the West is so good, but it's about, you know, at least early on here, JR, the teams, like the Jazz and the Suns, are they the real deal? I mean, we're going to find out.
Break away from the webcam and start living life this summer with Milwaukee Sports and Social. Introducing Milwaukee Sports and Social, a brand new recreational, co-ed softball and kickball league for the city of Milwaukee that is designed to help you and your friends make the most out of summer 2021. Register as an individual or sign up with a few friends as a partial team. Milwaukee Sports and Social will then fill out your roster with fun Milwaukee locals who you can have a great summer with. Registration is only $99 per person, but listeners can take $5 off their registration with code BASKETBALL at checkout. Start enjoying your social life again. Register today at MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. That's MilwaukeeSportsAndSocial.com. I just am fascinated to see those first two series in the West with the 1 and the 2 seed, with whether it's Lakers or Warriors or whatever. I think, I mean, are the Jazz and Suns safe for the second round? It stinks that they finally, those two teams have sort of had their moment here and risen above in a year where the Warriors are not at full strength and the Lakers were injured all year. I mean, it obviously would be those two teams, and those two teams would be the top two teams if everybody was at full strength. And now the Suns and Jazz have their moment. Are they going to be able to keep it if they have to face off with these teams in the first round? That's going to be good stuff. As far as the postseason award voting, we've talked a lot about the MVP. Jokic is it. He's going to win the MVP. It's probably going to be pretty close to unanimous. But as far as how this voting plays out, I saw some stat comparisons on Twitter on Monday, looking at Joel Embiid and Giannis. And I mean, Giannis's numbers are better. I don't think it's even necessarily arguable. Embiid's the team. He's part of the team that is, you know, the top seed in the East. So that certainly comes you get some of the cachet that comes with that territory, but he played in far fewer games than Giannis, and you know, quite honestly, isn't quite as good. I think that there's a really easy argument that Giannis is the better player. I do think Joel Embiid ends up second in the voting, and Giannis third, maybe fourth, depends how many people get some late Steph Curry push, how much that carries his candidacy. How do you think that plays out?
Yeah, I mean, I do think I voted for Nikola Jokic for MVP. I've mentioned that before. I think, you know, he played the entire season. He's been that good. I think if there were any doubts about him, the way Denver played, the way he played after Jamal Murray went out, should have erased such doubts, right? So that's that. I voted for Nikola Jokic. Now I did. If our loyal listeners to the pod would know that I had Joel Embiid as sort of an MVP leader for the time that he played early in the year. I did vote Giannis number two. However, I think he did play more games. I think he what the Bucks did this year in the regular season, what they tried to do, I think went under the radar nationally. That happens. You know, I don't think people really dialed in on the Bucks, like, you know, running five zone plays for 30 games and then running 230 after and switching that. Like, that kind of minutia, like, that just gets lost. Like, I'll be honest, I don't know what Monty Williams was doing in Phoenix all the time either, right? But I just think Giannis had a better season than even his last two MVPs, whether the numbers were there or not. So I end up going with Giannis. He played more. Embiid three. I put Chris Paul fourth, JR. I don't know how many votes he's going to get. I just couldn't ignore what Phoenix did and what his impact was with that team. And then Steph Curry fifth. Again, just individually, just sort of an insane season. Really, the Paul thing for me, it was like Paul and Rudy Gobert. I thought I just went with Chris Paul, I guess, on that one. So that was my MVP list. That was a tough one, though. You know, I think Giannis deserves to be in that two or three. You're right, though. I think Embiid might. For me, it might come down to the games played thing. So many guys missed so many games this year, JR. That was really hard for me with, like, the All-NBA stuff, too, especially at the guard position. But Giannis, I think, you know, at least deserves to be in that number two spot.
Yeah, as far as the All-NBA, because this is really the only other award that would involve members of the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis will be first team, but Drew Holiday has got to at least figure in here somewhere, right?
Yeah, so just for fans to know, the league did not help us with, like, front court, back court. For instance, like, you could vote Chris Middleton as a guard or forward. Luka Doncic, guard or forward. You could vote Joel Embiid as a forward. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, guard. Like, so you had a logjam at guard? And that, to me, that did not benefit Drew Holiday when it came to all NBA. I did put him on the all defensive team, first team, Giannis second team. So I struggled with that, JR. I elected to put Chris Middleton as a third team all NBA forward. I think Chris had that kind of year. He played nearly every game. I think playing that many games mattered. You hate to penalize a player for health. Like, it's not anyone's fault. They fell victim to that league's health and safety protocols, but that happened, right? And so I think Chris Middleton's year was that good. I think Bradley Beal's year was that good. Donovan Mitchell's year was that good. And I know fans are going to look it up and say, wow, Bradley Beal, Mitchell, they played only 50-something games. I think, you know, Mitchell with the best team in basketball for most of the year, I think Bradley Beal's season was so good. So, I had Chris Middleton as the second Bucks vote locally for me, JR. And that it was tough, man. That was really tough. If fans want to know, I had Giannis as a forward, Luka Doncic as a forward, and I went with Dame Lillard and Steph Curry as my first team All-NBA guards. That may be somewhat controversial nationally. I don't know. Jokic as the center. And then my second teams were Randall Leonard at forward, Gobert center, Chris Paul, Jason Tatum as the guards for the second team.
It's a bit like fantasy sports where you've got a guys have positional versatility in the postgame, the postseason voting. And you got to figure out, well, if I put this guy at a forward, that leaves this guy available at one of my guard right. spots. And that's not how it's supposed to work. I wish we could get away from the positional stuff. I don't know why the NBA has been so slow on this. Positions don't exist. I mean, if your center can't shoot threes, he's probably not, you know, not surviving in the NBA. That's not what was intended. You know, what the founding fathers intended. There's some dangerous language to pursue, but I don't know why this is constantly coming up. I mean, you have guys whose contracts are tied into whether or not they make one of these all NBA teams.
Yeah, and that's all messed up too to be.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, it's a little bit like having all-star clauses, but you don't make the all-star team because in baseball, because every team has to have a representative. I mean, so the last place team has a middle reliever who's good and he makes it over a closer who's dominating or another reliever who's dominating on a bigger team. That calculus doesn't really make sense to me, but that's the way it is. I don't think Chris Middleton will get a spot this year. He deserves one, deserved it last year, didn't get it. I don't think it'll happen this year for him, but it'd be cool. It'd be cool because it's deserved at some point in his career. He's been pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, you know, flirting with that, you know, Kyrie Irving got there. That's probably the one, you know, all these votes are public, so, you know, I don't know who's going to dig into my ballot necessarily. Irving's probably the one. You know, he had that great statistical season, you know, the 50-40-90 split that has only been done, what, eight other times.
Yeah.
You know, he played 54 games and beat 51, you know, Beal 60, Donovan Mitchell 53. Like, that's probably the one I really vacillated on between Irving and Donovan Mitchell, JR, you know, but. You know, Brooklyn was really good, and so was Utah. And, yeah, it's – I don't know. I think, you know, going to the front court, back court thing probably would be best because if you totally eliminated because it would turn into – you mentioned the fantasy element. If you eliminated the idea of going to front court, you – like a guy like Gobert – wouldn't really be appreciated, and maybe he's not already, but he would totally get lost. Like, it would almost become the bigs would only get all defensive honors because it would turn into the sexy, well, the forward averaging 28, 10, you know what I mean? So I think you got to keep some semblance of the big, just so that, you know, the media folks like myself don't get lost in the numbers. But to your point, yeah, I get what they tried to do. I don't know why Joel Embiid was listed as a forward. Some of that, that didn't make much sense. But, you know, so that's why you might get some screwy votes. Luka Doncic, someone might look at my ballot and say, you know, oh, Luka's not a forward. But you know what? They let me vote him that way. So that don't, you know, send a message to the league on that one.
Speaking of Rudy Gobert, let's talk real quickly about some of these other awards. We'll go through them pretty quickly. Defensive Player of the Year. This is an award I find a lot of people say players talk. Bam Adebayo is a good example. Even Drew Holiday. Yeah, I should be Defensive Player of the Year. I'm going to be. In some cases, players say I will be Defensive Player of the Year, and they're not really even going to finish in the top three. So I find that interesting. Very difficult thing to quantify. Giannis, of course, won this award last year. I do think it'll be Rudy Gobert this year. Ben Simmons is probably the other top candidate, but I'm guessing you're seeing Rudy winning this one.
I do. He's been that good. I did have Ben Simmons second. My third, you only allowed to vote for three. And I had a really hard time, JR, between Drew Holiday and Draymond Green. I really did. Like, I wish I could have had four or five. I ended up putting Draymond Green third. I think how good he was again on the best defensive team in basketball mattered. I think Drew was the best defensive player on the Bucks.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I had him on the first team all defense, Giannis on the second team. That was tough. But you're right. Like, that's one of those where, you know, Drew Holiday is, I think, has been criminally undervalued in that area for years. So hopefully he gets his due on the first team this year.
Yeah, that's the other thing I think people don't realize with Holiday. It's easy to notice that you've got an offensive upgrade over Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe is a very good defensive player, and I wouldn't even necessarily go so far as to say it's an upgrade, but you're not missing a beat having right. Holiday in there, and you're getting a massive offensive upgrade. And I think everybody knew that at the beginning, but that's something to also appreciate as these playoffs roll on, or as you look at the matchup with Miami. I mean, it is such a better team because Drew Holiday is there. Not to disparage Eric Bledsoe directly. I mean, he did some good things for the Bucks, but just that one-to-one replacement alone has improved this team. And then, you know, maybe they've improved in some other areas too. I think it's debatable about their bench and a couple other things, but you know, they're going to be better on the floor, and that's going to be a big deal here. Coach of the year, who'd you pick and why was it Tibbs?
I did pick Tom Thibodeau. I vacillated with Monty Williams in Phoenix.
Sure, he's the other obvious choice.
You know, yeah, maybe. And I just think what New York was not just expected to be, but what they were early, and then they, you know, I mean, look, Thibodeau, I've had so much respect for him, you know, going back to his Chicago days and just what he kind of extracts out of teams, and you look at that roster, their guys got better. I mean, that's part of it too, JR, to me. Like, Julius Randle is going to win, you know, most improved. I mean, there's a reason for that, right? Like, there's a reason Tom Thibodeau's players win individual awards as well. So yeah, I thought it was close for me though, but it was Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks.
Yeah, Julius Randle, I think people forget who don't follow the Knicks. That guy was he wasn't drafted by the Knicks. He's a low, not low level, but he was a pickup that was really an unsexy one in light of the Knicks, A, not getting the first overall pick that ended up going, you know, to the Pelicans with Zion Williamson, and then B, not signing Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, you know, not getting either of those big fish. They go to Brooklyn, you know, elsewhere in New York. And so the Knicks are left thinking, well, we got no other options. We'll sign Julius Randle. We'll improve here. They bring in Derrick Rose. I mean, the Knicks team was, I don't want to call them a laughingstock, but they definitely were, people were laughing at them for not being able to land one of those franchise-changing players. And then Tom Thibodeau takes that, molds it into a team that is a top four seed in the Eastern Conference. It's wild. It's absolutely a wild, rapid ascension. I'm sure if you go back to the beginning of the season, there were not a lot of people who thought this team was a playoff team, let alone a top four team in the East. So right. Got to give your props to Thibodeau. Julius Randle is absolutely going to win Most Improved Player. I wouldn't even spend a lot of time talking about that. Last one, though, Rookie of the Year. There's a couple candidates here. I think it'll ultimately go to LaMelo Ball. That wouldn't necessarily be my choice. I would love to see a ton of love for Tyrese Halliburton, the Oshkosh kid, but this injury that he had, I don't know if he would have won it anyway, but getting hurt late in the year with the Kings takes him out of the equation. But a phenomenal rookie season for Tyrese Halliburton, one of those just guys who does everything, you know, sort of a little bit even better version of Malcolm Brogdon is kind of the ceiling there, a guy who can just, you know, fit, do any number of things and do everything well. I do think it'll be LaMelo, though, right?
I do think LaMelo will win the award. I voted actually for Minnesota's Anthony Edwards.
And that's the other guy, a guy who's electric. I mean, you got to give him his credit, too.
And that, to me, I mean, he played. You know, again, it's not LaMelo's fault. He broke his wrist. But, Anthony Edwards played the full season. And I think there has to be, at least the way I view of the year awards, is if you play most or all of the year, you know, sometimes that can't be helped and there's transcendence and that's why there's gray areas. But I think when it's close, you know, and that's where I went and why I don't, but you know, I don't think that's one of those. JR, I don't know how this has worked in the past. It feels like there's always been like co-rookies of the year several times. I could see that happening in the voting. I think LaMelo will win it. He's deserving. I just happen to vote for Anthony Edwards.
I love Anthony Edwards. He's fun. He's on a team that isn't in the spotlight yet, but it's pretty easy to see how they can. I mean, that guy's primetime viewing. He's like, he's not Zion Williamson level as the first overall pick, of course not, but he's not far below that in terms of just the excitement factor, the wow factor that he brings to that team. That team needs to get competitive. Pelicans haven't yet either, unfortunately, for in the arc of Zion's brief career, but. That's a fun team. That's a fun team if they're competitive, and Anthony Edwards would be at the front of that. So real quickly, we'll talk more. I'd say we'll have another pod early in this playoff series. We'll get to look at that a little bit more granularly, but big picture wise, I floated something a couple days ago on Twitter that I think actually has a pretty easy answer. But the question was, because Giannis had just put up a stat line a couple games ago that had only been done once before in Bucks history by Kareem. Kareem is still, in my mind, even though he only played for six seasons, unquestionably the greatest player in Bucks history. He is the leader in several statistical categories. He was the centerpiece of the team's only title in 1971. I think that's a no-brainer. My question was, is Giannis already the number two greatest player in Bucks history? Even if his career ended this moment, would he be up there? There aren't many contenders for that title, which is why I think it's pretty clear to me that Giannis would be the guy. You could look at Oscar Robertson, certainly, whose time in Milwaukee was brief, only 4 years, even though he was part of that title team. Sidney Moncrief is another one that comes to mind. Marcus Johnson. Those are the obvious possible answers. I do think Giannis is clearly the number two best player if his career ends today. Knowing that he's still going to be here through his 20s, I think that he's going to be the number one best player in Bucks history. I think he's going to eclipse all of Kareem's marks. And if he wins a title, it's a no-brainer. But the question is, what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't, what if they do bow out to the Nets in the second round? What if they don't get back to the NBA Finals? Can we still call him that? Can we still call him the greatest player in Bucks history? So we did have some responses. Most people agreed that, yes, he's clearly number two. It's not really even a debate. Some people suggested, earnestly suggested, because there were lots of suggestions like Marty Conlon, but earnestly suggested that there were other guys on there. And some people said until he wins a title, he's not going to pass Kareem. How do you feel about that? How do you look at greatness as it relates to Giannis?
Yeah, it's, I think he is number two. Oscar. His prime had passed. I think leading to a championship and then going to another finals in 4 years is pretty impressive and shouldn't be discounted. I think
I compare him to Raleigh Fingers, who came to Milwaukee late in his career, won a Cy Young and MVP. They went to a World Series. He was a big part of that, but still, you don't think of Raleigh Fingers as only a Brewer, of course. And Oscar more so, you think of him as a Buck, but that's because he won the title here. I mean, but he'd been in the league a decade already.
Right. I think really, man, if there's now a challenger for Giannis as number two, wouldn't it be, and maybe it's not because Giannis has two MVPs, but wouldn't it be the recent Hall of Fame inductee, Bob Dandridge?
You're going off the map with this one. Talk to me.
I mean, nine seasons with the Bucks, right? All rookie, title winner, three-time All-Star. I don't know. He didn't get his All-NBA, All-Defense till he was in Baltimore or Washington. I'm just looking at, the Bucks' career 20-point-a-game scorer. I mean, is Marcus – how do you view that? Is it – because now he's a Hall of Famer. Does that change, where people would rank, Dandridge's Bucks' career? That's 9 years. Giannis is coming up on 9 years, right? I don't know. I'm interested in that. I don't think anyone would say Bobby Dandridge is a better player. That's not what I'm saying. I don't know. I wonder if he's because the recent Hall of Fame induction, does that change? Marcus is a finalist. Sydney's a Hall of Famer. I don't know. I'm asking you.
Let me ask you about it. Let me ask you something you're familiar with. The Bulls are pretty comparable to this. I think it's possibly arguable that the second best player in Bulls history is a guy who's notoriously underrated because he played with the first best player, and all of his championships, all of his success will be inextricable from Michael Jordan. How do Bulls fans view Scottie Pippen? Do they see him as number two, clear cut?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. I think most people would call Scottie number two over, you know, Artis Gilmore or Jerry Sloan or Bob Love, even.
Bob Love, baby.
Yeah, and I think, and it's not just the titles. I think part of that is, you know, Scottie's a Hall of Famer. I think it's him being included in that top 50 of all time, like the 50 greatest players list. Like, that's an extra category, you know? I think you add the titles with that, the sort of extra awards Scottie does right there. Even though he didn't win an MVP, even though he didn't, he was an all-star. He's 7-time All NBA, 10-time All Defense. I mean, he had all those sort of individual things. I think Scottie's number two in that way for Chicago fans. I'm not saying Giannis isn't number two. I'm more curious sort of where like the next tier is.
Yeah.
You know, like is it Sidney because he spent all that time? Does Dandridge because they won the title?
Right. And that's super interesting. Super interesting because so much of the conversation would be, well, Giannis would be number one, but he's got to win the title. Okay, well, Dandridge won the title. And the retort to that, of course, is, well, he was the second or third best player on that team. How can you count that? And I'm like, well, if titles are what they mean, you know, then you have to say that the guys who win the title are key contributors. We're not talking about bench guys. We're not going crazy. But key contributors to titles, that should carry more weight than stars on teams that don't win titles, right? Now, I would say statistically, Dandridge doesn't lead this franchise in many categories. In fact, I think minutes played is the only real meaningful one that he's got. But then your counterargument to that is, well, sure, because he's not going to score 30 points a game when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson are his teammates. You know, he's not going to hand out 10 assists a game. How are you going to rack up the stats? And I do think all of that is part of, you know, Bob Dandridge was, we think, super underrated, and he finally is getting his due with this induction into the Naismith Hall of Fame that was announced a couple days ago, and Tony Kukoc is going in. He's a guy who played four seasons with the Bucks as well, but Dandridge, really cool to see him honored in that way. I gotta be honest, when you said, is Dandridge a number two candidate, my head immediately said, no, are you out of your mind? But the more I talk about it, the more I think, well, if we're judging it on these criteria, where the title is the most important thing, you know, I don't know if the Bucks win the 71 title without Bob Dandridge. It wasn't like he was just a bystander. I don't know if they go back in 74, and then he goes and wins another one and shows that he's capable of winning another one as an even bigger guy on the, you know, on the food chain. So, I don't know, man. I still, you know, I guess at the end of the day, it's still, for me, it's going to be, you know, Oscar or Ray Allen or Moncrief or Marcus Johnson. But you bring up a good point, man. You do bring up a good point.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, and it's fun to talk about because it's so long ago. People just maybe just wave it away. But you're right. I mean, you know, Bob Dandridge was the second leading rebounder behind Kareem. Third leading scorer, just a point behind Oscar in that championship year. And you're right, you know, to go to Washington, you know, first of all, he averaged 20 points a game in the finals, both finals he played in. And that, to me, like some of our, I'm going to shout out, you know, Tim Erickson had Ray Allen number three. Our guy Kevin Madden and Rick Blue and, you know, Giannis has to win the title type of thing to get to number one. I know I sidetracked this there. I think if Giannis plays out, let's just say the 4 years of this deal that we know he's, you know, the fifth year is an option. That's 12 years with the Bucks.
That's double what we had with Kareem.
I think at that point, whether there's a championship in there or not, to me, he's the best player the Bucks have ever had.
Yep, I agree with you. I think this is an unfair thing, but physical gifts make him, you know, we know for a fact that he is unlike any other basketball player the Bucks have ever had, or that most teams have ever had. That's not something you necessarily give him credit for, but he's the degree to which he is special is something that is pretty much unprecedented. And then, you know, he's going to have all the stat categories to himself. He's a tremendous story, a tremendous underground story. I mean, I don't know how you'd compare it to Kareem's story, where he is, you know, unquestionably the best player in the country, falls into their lap because they had the first pick in the draft. They won the coin flip, whereas Giannis is a guy that was developed, you know, to a degree, and a hidden gem that they found. I think that all ties into it, and that can adjust the narrative as people see fit. But I think he's going to be the number one player in this franchise history without a title. But you know what? Maybe let's just make it a moot point. Let's just let the Bucks go ahead and win. Let's do it this year. Let's get it out of the way before the Warriors are back to full strength and the Nets really figure it out in year two or three of this big three. Let's just do it now, right, Jim?
Yeah, I guess they could. That's what they're hoping for. To me, it's such a title-driven I hate the word narrative because it's just like it, you know, or you know, when people like the media, but the talking head part of it, you know, the television show, the talk show type stuff drives that. The players have bought into it, you know, the super teams, both in football and basketball, but it's not. I almost swore again. It's really hard. It's really freaking hard to win a championship. Yeah. And then especially when you're playing in the eras of the outliers, like Michael Jordan was the outlier. Mm-hmm. LeBron James is the super outlier. Tom Brady is the super outlier. Like, it's really, and so when you play with them in their galaxy, your star looks dimmer when if you're one galaxy over, it's, you're the sun. You're not just, you know, a star out there. So, yeah, I think, and look, and Kareem will always be shaded or colored in with what happened in Los Angeles, right? Like, it's in terms of the broader conversation, like all the extra championships and all the extra MVPs and all. But in Milwaukee, he was a comet. And I think if Giannis plays 12 years, that's, and then moves on, like, that's longer. There are records, there are franchise records there. There are, look, the NBA, this is no knock on the 70-71 team or the 74 team. It was a different league. It's different. It was different. So if Giannis and the Bucks never reach a finals, if they never win one, by the time it's said and done, he will be the greatest Milwaukee Buck of all time.
The Milwaukee Bucks will begin the first round of their playoff series sometime soon. We don't, again, have those details as we record this, but I think it's Sunday or Monday, we're going to kick into gear the Bucks against the Miami Heat, two games at Pfizer Forum. I have got to get to one of these games and get myself some of that chicken, golden chicken, big fan, and I miss it very much. But obviously, or Gold Rush chicken? Oh, man, they're all running together. All the various chickens in my head are running together. I hope to get there, but if not, we'll be watching on TV, Jim. Any last thoughts before I let you go?
Well, no, this is everything the Bucks have said they were playing for, practicing for, experimenting for this season. They put this pressure on themselves from the jump in December. And let's not forget to hold them to that, I guess, to a degree. Like, yeah, Brooklyn, Philadelphia are good. It wouldn't be a shock if the Bucks lost. But I think when you say the regular season doesn't matter, you're going to try all these things and do all these things, it's all about the playoffs. Well, it's the playoffs, JR. So it's all about it. Let's go.
Read everything Jim has at jsonline.com. We're going to have stuff all week. I'm going to have a piece posting that looks back at the biggest moments of the year. There's some fun plays and some fun individual moments from the season. We'll also just a ton of content from Jim Ozarski. Our columnist, Lori Nickel, will be on the case as well. And then we'll lock in and see if this Milwaukee Bucks if the tweaks they made, if the adjustments you're talking about end up paying off at the most important time of year here in the playoffs. Thanks for tuning in to the Point Forward Podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a note on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. He's at Jim Ozarski. You can let us know, give us questions. Let us know what you think of the podcast, and we will we'll definitely, if you ask us a question, we're gonna answer it as best we can on a future episode of this podcast. So check us out. Leave us a rating or review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.